Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
It is indisputable that many people of the urban American experience have faced historical challenges. Many times, these disappointments are passed from one generation to the next. And the occurrences that most people see, they simply can't believe. However, despite the aforementioned realities, what is needed most from people, those of us who say they care about the plight of urban Americans, is to demonstrate both tough love and compassion. Tough love and compassion as they offer any kind of assistance toward the victim's self-determination. Welcome to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're grateful for you that will join us who have and those who perhaps will listen afterwards. Our topic tonight, when empathy is more helpful than sympathy. Now, that may not fall too easy on some people's ears, and I understand why, and that's part of why we're having this discussion tonight. When empathy is more helpful than sympathy. It's July the 22nd, 2022. For our new listeners, we'll get through our monologue here very briefly and open up our phone lines to have some robust discussion with you. And that's what it's really all about. We learn that way, okay? And this platform, this community, we have an opportunity to share. All we ask is that you share your position and show courtesy to others who might share and or have a different position. All right? When empathy is more helpful, than sympathy, 2 Thessalonians, the 3rd chapter and the 10th verse reads like this: "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither shall he eat." If any would not work, ain't got no business, excuse my English, put nothing in his mouth or her mouth. Come back to that in just a little bit. But that's tangential to what we're talking about. When empathy is more helpful than sympathy. Now, to get to that point, to intimate this point, I want to, at the risk of insulting others' intelligence, I just want to review what the meaning, a functional meaning that you can find in the dictionary, of empathy and sympathy. And then we want to relate it to it. But more importantly, I want to list to you some things that I'm convinced are going on in the background when people demonstrate or engage in showing empathy, when they demonstrate or engage in showing sympathy. There's something going on. There's something going on. And then you got to ask yourself, what's the motive? All right, but hold on one second. Let's get there. First, let's look at empathy. Basically, this is the ability to appreciate and even share the feelings of another person. For instance, we've all been young before. We've all had disappointment as children. And one of the things we can do best as parents or even as other social beings is to appreciate when somebody's sad, when they're disappointed. Huh? Now, just because we appreciate it does not mean we're going to lay ourselves before a train track for. I wish I had a witness here. So basically, empathy is the ability to appreciate, to understand where someone is coming from, to be able to mentally place yourself in their shoes. All right? Then let's look at sympathy. What is sympathy then, Doctrine? Very simply, it is the offering of thought and acts of pity. That's what I want to emphasize. It is offering thoughts and even actions of pity and sorrow for someone else's misfortune. Huh? Here's what's going on. In sympathy, consider that I done fell on the ground, bust my head, and rather than you help me get up, you sitting there crying and patting on me. I don't need you to do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. There's some other things I need you to be doing. You understand what I'm saying? The story is told of these hikers who were in the wilderness, in the forestry, and where there were a lot of snakes and what have you. And one of them climbed a certain tree, and the other came behind them. And just as the one that trailed began to climb up, bam, he was hit by a snake. Come to find out it was a poisonous snake. They looked back. They saw that this snake was poisonous. His venom can kill you. And so his friend laid there sweating and shaking. And he said, go to town, run to town and get the doctor or find out what we need to do. Friend was frantic, and he finally brought himself together to get up and run and made it to the town. And Ren found a doctor. He said, doctor, my friend, he got bit by a snake. And I want to know what I need to do to save him. I'll run back to him as soon as I find out. So he says, well, what you're going to have to do, wherever the snake bit him, at the entry point of the bite, you're going to have to place your lips around it, and don't suck too hard because you might suck in the poison, but suck out just enough for you to hurry up and spit it out on the ground. And that'll get the venom out of his blood system, and it'll help slow it down until somebody else can get that help. He looked at the doctor, and the doctor looked at him, now go. He hesitated and looked at the doctor strange. Finally, he went on, got back to his friend. The friend said, oh man, I'm almost dead, man. What happened? Give me some good news. What did the doctor say? He looked at the bite, which happened to have been on his friend's behind. And he looked in the sky, and he looked at his friend, and he began to think about what the doctor says. You've got to put your lips around the spot where the bite is and suck it out. Looked down at his friend and shook his head and said, man, the doctor said you're going to die. We try to laugh or point into reality here. If you want to help somebody, you got to go all the way to give them what they need to survive. Now, if you just want to show sympathy, then that's a whole nother story. Empathy is much more useful and helpful to an individual who find themselves in a a pretty tough situation than sympathy is. All right? Now let's look at what's going on behind this sympathy. And then I want to relate that to something that I shared. I think I introduced this term back in 2017 on the air here, called the ghetto trap syndrome. The ghetto trap syndrome. And you know, I can talk about this because I'm from the ghetto. I'm straight out the ghetto, so I know what I'm talking about. But look, consider this. When people show sympathy, what it does is it makes the individual showing the sympathy, it makes them feel good. Huh? Look what I did. I was here for him or her. Yeah. Everybody watching you. Right? You're getting attention because of what you've done. Could you do that if nobody else was there? Could you do that if it caused some risk and harm to you? Would you do it? Another thing oftentimes we see when people are apt to show sympathy, it can lead to prolonged agony within the moment of challenge for the victim. As I was illustrating with the story about the snake bite, I don't need you being frantic, freaking out, and losing your head, or even being hesitant. I need you to be focused and deliberate and hurry up and get me to a point where I can do better. Are y'all with me? Oftentimes, those who quit to offer sympathy, rather, what happens is there's a good possibility that it might inhibit the proaction at the very moment that you need to be active and focused and deliberate in order to help that person out of that circumstance. We see this very, very clearly when it comes to the education of our children oftentimes. And my intention is not to slam public educators, but I'm talking about the system right now. Too much sympathy in the system. We don't need no more sympathy. We need action. And we need people that are willing to do the dirty work to get the job done. Because far too many of our babies are falling by the wayside. They're literally dying in our streets, not just in Nashville, Tennessee, all over, particularly urban America. Now, what's going on the scene behind empathy? I told you what happened when some folks, nice, nasty people who want to show you sympathy, keep that. You can have that. Show me some empathy. Here's what's going on there. The individual that displays empathy shows empathy in the sense that they're concerned about the immediate relief and the changes necessary to make the victim both comfortable and safe. Huh? And sometimes that may require some sacrifice on their part. It may require them to put themselves in harm's way. Uh-oh. Here's another thing. Consider this. There is a willingness on part of the empathizer to motivate the victim for them to help themselves. Yes, I'm going to help pull you up, but you're going to have to help pull too. You're too heavy for me to just pull around, break my back. Help me out, man. Help me to help you. Amen, Wall. Right? There's a willingness for them to be motivating, to be encouraging and uplifting in order for them to do what it takes to change their circumstance. That's what empathy is. Then lastly, empathy will never, let me say that again, empathy will never an individual from doing for themselves. My God. And don't you know, beloved, we see far too much of that now. Folk running up to you with a hidden agenda, telling you they want to help you. Huh? The very thing you need, though, is not what they're offering. You see, because they have an agenda. And I don't want to knock sympathy because there's a place for sympathy. There's a time where we mourn with our brothers and our sisters. There's a time we cry, we weep with them. Yeah, Yeah, but weeping may endure for a night. Let's get ready for the joy that comes in the morning time. You understand what I'm saying? Listen, listen, listen. I can let you know that I'm concerned about you, and I'll cry with you for a little while, but we're going to get up at this mud, man. We ain't going to keep walling down here. We're going to get on up. We're going to get up and make a difference. I'll help you get there. I ain't going to do it for you, not all of it, but I'll help you get there. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the social trauma historically that has been prevalent in urban America. And, you know, it's interesting that we're seeing this. I would argue that it's not a brand new crime spree, but the cover has been pulled off the reality that's been going on for too long, especially in certain places. But then you add to that the a little social experiment from this past summer that suggested to many who were already in a psychological, social, traumatic experience, it suggested to them that it's okay for you to go all out and do whatever you want to. You don't have to follow no order, no law, because, you know, you're who you are. That was certainly not helpful, and it's not helpful moving forward. So social trauma is any kind of shocking result of an event or situation where there is psychological disturbance, right? For instance, if you had a natural calamity, a storm came and tore your house up and you were in there, things fell on you, right? If there was a war, a battle, very similar to what we see too often on the streets, folk literally shooting at one another in a gunfight. Incidents such as kidnappings or the death of a loved one, exposure to risk or danger of some sort, right? And these things tend to have long-lasting effects psychosocially on neighborhoods, on families, on particular groups of people, certainly where they occur. Not just one time, not just every month or so, but on a daily and regular basis. It leaves social trauma, emotional trauma. Now, back in, I believe it was 2017 when I shared this, as a social scientist, I coined a phrase, and I came up with an idea, a suggestion about something, and here's what it is. When I was describing this far too familiar character type that we see in economically disadvantaged urban communities and neighborhoods, not that the people there are inherently bad, but when we look at the behaviors and we look at the results and the outcome, what we know is that that's not good. And I think if we would be intellectually honest with ourselves, if someone asked you, you would say, no, I do not want that to be my reality on a long-term basis. So I introduced this concept of the ghetto trap syndrome. Well, you might ask, well, Dr., what is this ghetto trap syndrome? Basically, it is a socioeconomically engineered disease. Let me slow down and say that again. I suggest to you that what we're looking at with my concept of ghetto trap syndrome, I'm going to describe the characteristics of it, is a socially economically engineered disease where some folk historically have come in with a political, economic, and a social agenda and have told you, I want to help. I want to show you some sympathy. And in the end, all they've left is carnage, destruction, disappointment, frustration, humiliation. Look at what ghetto trap syndrome is. When an individual is born in the social context of a home that is broken, what do you mean by that, Dr.? Where they don't have the tools and the resources, but more importantly, the human resources, a father and a mother to set certain things in place. Okay? And they grow up in a poor community that struggles people there share a common struggle for basic necessities, whether they perceive that to be real or it is real. But they lack economic resources, oftentimes because the breadwinners or the key people lack a certain type of level of education or preparation or training that enabled them to have a certain quality of life economically. Then they received substandard education. So another generation of them are not being educated, being empowered through knowledge and preparation. Add that to the exposure to regular acts of violence and even attitudes of hatred and jealousy and envy toward their neighbors, people that live right next to them. This causes young folk in particular, and not just young people, it's some great grown folk that are stricken with ghetto trap syndrome. My God, GTS. They're so messed up that they have the mindset that I cannot show anybody any empathy or sympathy because I'm only trying to survive myself. In fact, they take the mindset I got to kill before I get killed. Furthermore, violence is perceived as a necessary tool for their survival. Violence is perceived as a necessary tool for their survival. Where does this put us? Where does this put us, beloved? Where are we in a situation where people, human beings, who are neighbors to one another, have the impression that for them to be happy, for them to survive, they must prepare themselves using violence as a means of self-protection. It's an ugly situation. But it's what I described and have called the ghetto trap syndrome. Now, we're about to go to the phone lines. 657-383-0944. Wish you can join us here. The topic, when empathy is more helpful than sympathy. But Bobby Womack said something when he made it very clear about a character type. And I want to set this up for you and get you to understand what we're talking about here. What he was talking about was a character type called Harry Kipper. Just for a second there.
Everybody claims that they want the best things in life. But not everyone, want to go into the top. How's this particular fella walks around all day?
Listen to him. Listen to him. Just for a second.
Harry Hippie. Life's a sleeping shit. Life don't bug him. Fuck it, thank you, gotta be.
Nothing bothers him.
He might even say, pre-press the whole Sunday. I like
to help
a man.
Me too, Bobby. Me too. But what's going on, Bobby?
But I can't help him much when he's sleeping on the ground.
You listen to talk straight. Thank you, Father. Thank you, Brother Womack. Rest in peace. We all on talk straight here. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. When empathy is more helpful than sympathy. I got two callers here. 832. 4187 and 832-2538. There may be new callers to us. We got St. Louis is in the house with us as well. Welcome, callers. Let me welcome you if you're here for the first time, if you're not sound off. Let's go with 4187.
Oh, hello, good evening.
Hey!
How you doing?
I'm good. Where you been?
I've been trying to log in, and usually I be working on Thursday nights, and I had a free night, at least half of the night anyway tonight. So I thought I'd tune in.
I know who that is. That's my y'all. Excuse me. That's my sweetheart. I think I'm just gonna say that's my sweetheart right there. No, we're grateful for you. I've been watching your work. You've been doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I was listening to what you were saying. It's interesting because I was speaking with someone the other day and we were talking about it. And I guess when you said people come in and say, hey, I sympathize with you, they really not really sympathizing with you. They really don't feel your emotional pain. But can I throw another little monkey wrench in there?
Come on, then we're going to move it around.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You can have empathy is saying, I understand. I feel your pain. And
right.
I understand what you're going through. I might have even been in that certain circumstances of where you're going.
Exactly.
Let somebody say, I don't have to eat an apple to know it's sweet. I don't have to live in certain things to know concept of where people's going. But a concept of that is that some people be in the empathy mode, and instead of acting and helping, they just take on the person's pain. And that happens a lot. And instead of trying to help, they just get stuck. And so to add another component to that, you have to move from sympathy, empathy to compassion. And compassion is going to make you move to do some changes.
I love it. So let me get that right, that pathway. Sympathy, empathy to compassion. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. SEC, from sympathy to empathy to compassion. Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to hold that thought right there. Let me go to the other caller here, 2538. Welcome, 25. St. Louis, I'm not overlooking you, but you've been with us a while. We appreciate you. We're going to come to you in just a minute. Who was that? That looked like we missed 2538. Looked like we just lost them there. So we'll come right to St. Louis. St. Louis, welcome, sir. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Great. Any comments thus far? I'm going to come back to some of my friends.
Well, it'd be difficult for me to, in every case of the time, to tell somebody I know how they feel. I walked in their shoes. That's literally not possible. But sympathy is when you look at a person's position, their condition, and you feel you may be able to contribute toward their well-being. And I think that sympathy would be more, you know, when people's on the corner panhandling, and you have sympathy for them and want to help them out by giving them a few dollars. But I never have had to do that, so I can't tell them I know how they feel.
I see. Interesting. Okay. That's an interesting you point that. So let me just say this, and I want to ask you this question for one thing. My wife and I were in Atlanta not too long ago, and we saw just what St. Louis described. It looked like on every corner there was somebody with a sign, a mammy-made sign, with some message about how destitute and dire their situations were. And I asked her, I said, man, we don't have enough to give to everybody. And if we give to one, are we slighting the other? Maybe we just didn't give to none of them. And I asked my wife, I said, well, honey, if that was you, what would you do if that was you? She said, you know what? Ain't nowhere in the world, I don't care how broke I get, I'm going to stand out here and wait on somebody. I'm going to go get it myself. What do you think about that, 4187?
Well, I feel that.
I don't want to put you on the spot, man.
You put me on the spot. But I don't to be in a person's circumstances to understand. And I guess it's a conversation of sympathy and empathy kind of rolled up into there. I don't have to stand on the street and beg for money. But I know I don't want to be there. And I think because I know I would hate to be in that circumstances, it caused me to have a sense of empathy for them. No way that I can give to everybody. It's impossible. But at least I let the spirit move me to who I do give to.
Okay.
And I can help whoever I can help at that particular time.
Right. Well, you know that. I'm sorry. I apologize. I cut you off.
No, you didn't. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that you guys are aware that there are many instances where people get out of a brand new car, walk a few blocks, and stand on the corner like they broke like they pulled his pole down. You understand what I'm saying? Now, it's not up for us to try to figure out who's real and who's not. And I don't really have time for that. But now, what I have done personally is I have personally went to people and said, listen, it looks like you can use some help, right? Now, the question is, what is help?
Mm-hmm.
Is help giving them enough money just to make it today, or is help offering them resource and opportunity? Gave them a little cash and gave them my card and said, call me, I'll come pick you up and get you some places where you can be in a position where you don't have to stand here. Never heard from them again. Never heard from them again. Now, somebody may say, they may not have had a phone. I don't know. You can find a phone just about anywhere these days. Am I wrong about that, St. Louis?
No, you're right. A lot of them have phones.
Yeah. Look, you can look at the shoes they got on and tell it that they ain't doing too bad. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you ever been?
No, you're absolutely right.
Okay. Hold on.
Ruben.
Go ahead, Sandra. Go ahead.
You ever been in a bar? You're sitting there, the door open, here come a lady with dress real nice, a miniskirt. Just, you know, mid thigh or higher. And she say, I'm having a problem with my car. And you ask, you know, what can I do to help you? And she said, I don't know. So you follow her down the street to a car with the hood up, and you get down there, and after a while, somebody come up and rob you.
Never been in a bar like that, but I see where you're going.
And these things happen for real. But, no, like I say, I'd rather have the sympathy rather than empathy, because I've helped people that were sleeping in the doorway. Now, how would I change their position? Well, you're not going to change their position. All you can do is kind of give them some sort of relief. I'm not going to take them home and give them my bed and go back and sleep where they was in the doorway.
Why not?
That ain't going to happen.
Why not? Come on, man. Why not? No, I get you. I don't think I will either. But I will go this far, though, St. Louis, Carl, I will go this far. I will probe enough to ask if they want to be in a better situation. If I see you sleeping in the doorway, that tells me you either homeless, you're drunk, or something. You understand? You have a mental health. There's something that's going on. I realize I can't solve the whole world problem. Okay? And heaven knows I've tried in my short time. But I noticed something here, Ms. Campbell, in Nashville, I saw where there was a group that built these little mini homes that were geared toward homeless people, right? And St. Louis, what they're doing is offering them someplace off the street. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. My question is, how are you going to sustain that? You understand what I'm saying?
And that's a good question. And
I mean,
where people's generosity and donations and things like that. And I, you know what? I've been in it, and I realize it seems sometimes the more you do, it's like it just keep coming, and it can be overwhelming because you feel like you're not making a progress. But I guess if you make progress in a couple of people's lives and you change, sometimes you don't even know if you've done it. Then you succeeded in what you were supposed to do. And unfortunately, I kind of got my little group of homeless people I done made friends with. And I know their circumstances. And I know them. And they're the ones I kind of pick, and I'll do whatever I'm going to do for them. And I kind of target them. And they're the ones I choose to help. And every now and then I'll choose to help someone else, too. And then sometimes I just can't help financially or physically. You just can't do it.
Right.
But I leave it to the point that I know I do. And that's all I can say. And I think that's all God requires me to do. And I agree. It's overwhelming, and it's getting worse. And I've also said offered resources for people to go to. But I come to realize if you have people whose minds are just not right, and I don't, for lack of a better wording, they don't receive or understand what you're trying to get for them.
Well, that is the point right there. You have to ask yourself, what sense does it make to keep pouring water in a bucket with holes in it if you intend to carry that water anyway? You understand what I'm saying? Now, some people don't want you to pass your – they don't want their vessels fixed. And you respect them enough to leave them where you find them, but don't expect me to keep on pouring into something that is only going to be wasted. Right? Now, if I see you on the street today and I give you $10, every day I come this way, do you expect me to give you anything? Now, so it may sound harsh. I said at the beginning in the monologue that you got to show both tough love and compassion. Tough love and compassion.
Yep.
The tough love is, look, you're in a tough spot right now. I see that we're not here to embarrass you, put you on Front Street or nothing, but I want you to know that you and I, if you're willing to accept my assistance, I'm going to assist you with getting up and moving away from here, and then we can talk about how to keep you away from here. But if that's not a motive or a drive of yours, what am I there for? You understand? And am I helping you to give you anything on site? So St. Louis, I would just say that really with empathy, you understand where they're coming from, right? You appreciate their condition, but you're not willing to encourage them to stay there. And sometimes people say, man, you hurt his feelings. Well, maybe my feelings need to be hurt.
Well, let me say this. If you meet somebody on the street, you're probably looking at somebody who's hard and seasoned, a street liver.
Okay.
Which means that somebody done already came to them many times in the past with the suggestions that you're thinking about. They didn't want to do it. They are happy where they are. And there ain't nothing you're going to say at the moment that's going to outdo what they've heard in the past.
That is so true. That is so true. You know, St. Louis, I was I worked at a dual diagnosis facility as a counselor. And, man, this cat, I was supposed to, so there was a psychologist, a psychiatrist on staff, and our job was to talk to them throughout the day, record their concerns and their conversations, and chart them in a note, pass it on to the psychologist and psychiatrist, right, because they were there for treatment. This guy told me, man, he just laid it out to me. He said, man, ain't no need me wasting your time. I can tell you how to write one of these programs. I'm just here because they made me come. The judge made me come. And as soon as I can get up out of here, I'm out of here. Miss Campbell, what could I do but just say, okay, all right. I mean,
that's all you
see
do.
What I'm saying? Hey, okay then. Let me move on to somebody who can benefit from what we're trying to do here then. But, yeah, now I say that because in the too often I see and hear people, and I think, I really believe in my heart of heart that somewhere they mean well, they just may not understand that if under certain conditions, unless you're willing to change those conditions, and that's why I describe my concept of ghetto trap syndrome, if you're willing to directly and deliberately change certain conditions, you're fighting an uphill battle. And that's not your problem. I like what you said, Sister Campbell, because what you did was to transfer their pain and made it your pain. And guess what? When you fall and fall out, those individuals are likely to step right over you and keep on moving. Now, that's the funny part about it, right? You're going to kill yourself.
You're absolutely right.
Huh?
You're absolutely right. They will walk all over you and leave you alone, and that's where you come to the point that you don't take on another person's pain. But and you know what? Sometimes I do feel sympathy because I do feel sorry for what they're going through.
Me too.
Sometimes I don't. And then sometimes, you know what? If my dollar and 10 cents get you a cup of coffee, that's all I needed to supply to you at that particular time. And yes. I guess they said some people plant, some people water, and you let the growth come where it comes.
And that's my
philosophy on it now. I do what I can do. And because I have a little group, and we have a pantry, and we take them food, and it just kind of blows my mind. They're out there, they got their children, and, you know, it's a concept that I can't understand, because even in my worst time, I'd be thinking, I ain't going to do this. And one of the social workers told me one time, and she made me realize, Lunice, it's a mind thing. It's some things in people's mind. And some of these people are going to never change. It's just in their mind.
He's right.
I would argue that too many young people are discouraged from having some kind of honest hustle at a young age, right? Because your honest hustle will lead you to learn as much as you can, right, to be able to provide for yourself.
Right.
And not looking for your parents or nobody else to do it long term. Where's your hustle? Where's your drive? Where's your motivation? And I know you talk about that a lot, St. Louis, in terms of encouraging young people to go into STEM, and, you know, the sciences and what have you. But, I mean, go ahead.
Well, that's where you're supposed to start. See, I don't have no empathy for no George Floyd. George Floyd was poisoning himself, and I take offense for people trying to sell him on to everybody, including me, without my permission, as a hero. But the young ones, you have to put into them what's needed so they can understand and recognize what they got and see how it can be applied based on demand. That's how you stop those people from having to sleep under the bridge, other than, as the lady described, they want to do it anyway. That's about all you can do.
You know, that's a funny thing you say that, because what happened, we have a homeless commission here, and they've been doing a pretty good job of really trying to address a lot of those things. It's been hit and miss. Probably the biggest thing is these little houses that I saw. But one of the things that I tried to advise some time ago and continue to offer as a suggestion is that when you see people come here from other cities who have no ties, it's going to be kind of hard to really do a whole lot for them if they're not capable of doing for themselves, right? Now, with those homeless people that live here, they got family. A lot of times it's about reestablishing a connection and a tie with family, and addressing the reason why they are separated from them in the first place, right? But if you got transit individuals, that makes it kind of difficult because they have no real tie to the city.
I can understand programs that's designed to help people, quote unquote, to stand on their feet. All of a sudden things happen that they had no control of, and they got kids. Mm-hmm. Yes. There should be some mechanism to help them, whereas in a given amount of time, they're able to go back out and depend on themselves rather than having to depend on others. Because people really don't want people on the streets in dire circumstances, because that creates some sort of moral, spiritual thing that can be spread amongst a lot of other people. So it needs to be stopped. Help those people to become contributing citizens to humankind and performing their civic duties.
Right. Well, you know, I used to have a pet peeve that if I was driving by and there was a stranded vehicle, I would look in the car to see if there was a woman or children in there. And chances are I would stop if it was. But if that car was there and it was a male, I'd have to think twice about stopping and really assess the situation very strongly, right? Or if there was a woman with a male in there, I might consider stopping, but I'd have to think about it twice. But my pet peeve is, just like my wife or my daughter, I would want somebody to see, ask them at least, are you all right? Now, to your point, St. Louis, I've seen in my lifetime people have been playing the role of Good Samaritan, right? And there was a lady that who was like a damsel in distress, and that was a trap. That was a trap for that was used to lure them in, and some rascal came out and, you know, took advantage of. So you do have to be wise. I like what Ms. Kemba was saying. She followed the spirit and let her two of the senses talk to her about, well, before she get into something. You listen to Talk Straight. We're talking from the topic when empathy is more helpful than sympathy. Now, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't have sympathy. I don't want to give that impression at all. But oftentimes, based on what we describe with empathy, it seems to me that you get more out of it. And one of the primary things is I tried to make a point to explain what I was saying by suggesting those things that happens, some of the hidden agendas or motivation. Maybe they're not hidden. Maybe they're overt with them. But quite often what you find is people come and they want to insert themselves in your business, and you got to ask yourself, what for? Ain't you got some business? Ms. Campbell, my mama used to say, take 6 months to mind your business and 6 months to leave other folks alone.
I know that's right.
And the whole year's gone. No, but I was trying to make the point that St. Louis, I was making a point earlier that with empathy, the individual that shows the concern is willing to ensure that the victim knows that I'm willing to help you find immediate relief. I'm not going to just pat your head, cry for a little bit, and walk off and leave you. See what I mean? Now, that requires a little sacrifice of your time.
Well, that's why you got agencies out there to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
You can steer somebody to an agency, but I keep telling you, in many of the cases of the time, you see somebody after one winter, then you see them after. Those people is well-seasoned in living in those conditions. The average person that finds himself in that position may not survive, but the ones, many that you see all the time, have been out there for a long, they understand what's going on. And to be truthful with you, if you don't be careful, you and him both will be out there on the street.
What? Well, you know, I have come home, St. Louis, and all allowance my wife gave me, I made the money, but she gave me allowance. I didn't have no more. And she told me that once before.
Yeah, you that guy be teaching you how to make a sign.
Now, I don't say that to say that I'm not empathetic or sympathetic towards the plight, but that's a good point. Now, really, I think if let's go back to these houses, that's an interesting model, and I wonder if other cities would try it. I wonder how long, and I didn't really look into it, but how long would it be before social workers and people like that will help them really get the resources, and how long do they stay in the house? Is it 3 months? Is it 6 months or that sort of thing? Because really the truth is there are a lot of homeless people who have mental health issues. That's one of the primary reasons they're homeless. And I would certainly say that I'm not one that's equipped to deal with severe mental health issues. I would certainly help them find a clinician that can do that. And that's really where – but, you know, Ms. Campbell, the average person who goes to go about their life working and doing what they want to, they really want to help, but they feel helpless when you look at the gravity of these circumstances. And I know that's a field that you're in. How do you manage that when you want to be helpful, but you say, man, this is just too much for me? And I'm not asking
you. It could be overwhelming.
Yeah.
I guess what you do is that, and this is what I had to learn because I found myself when I first got into this doing things, I was like, oh, my God, I got to do this and do that. And you have to really step back and take an assessment of the circumstances. And you have to look at it all differently and kind of like have a plan. But one of the things I've come to realize is that the system say they want to work, but the system is full of crap. They're full of bureaucratic crap. They take
That's
a lot
true.
Of people through a lot of stuff, and they say, it's like, it's one thing to say, I'm going to do something, but I have to make you go to 20,000 loops to do it. And the people don't have the capabilities, the minds are to do it. And they lose interest in anything like that. And sometimes that system, and you make the point, the system is designed to cause people to do it. And just look at what the circumstances are now. A lot of people are becoming in situations where they've never been before. We look at the wages are so low. People are making wages that are so wages people made 15, 20 years ago. That's what they want to pay people now. The housing circumstances are so low. And it was so funny because somebody was saying, well, they're building affordable houses. I said, well, how much are those affordable houses? They're $250,000. I said, I'm making $15 an hour. How? And it, I could be married, both of us together. We couldn't afford a $250,000 home. So it's not a combination of one thing. We have to look at the whole dynamics of it. And
Absolutely.
And some of the things, unfortunately, the system is causing a lot of people to get out there. They're causing them to do hustling, in which some of them are hustling, and it's just causing a whole paradigm of things. And I don't know. I really don't have an answer. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't have an answer. I know we have a food bank, and I've seen people who I never thought would be in food lines getting food.
Right.
And,
right.
yeah, some of them have some nice cars. But you come to find out some of them lost jobs, in lost income, especially during the COVID.
That is true. That is true. You know, and that's a great point that and St. Louis, you made reference to that earlier, until you said you don't know if it's possible to walk them out. It's an adage, though. It's not literal, but when you say walk a mile, when you can really appreciate because you've been through a similar experience, you understand where he's coming from. Now, I'm going to tell y'all the truth, man. I'm going to tell y'all the truth. Anybody can fall. Anybody can face hard times. The question becomes, what are you willing to do to overcome your hard times? You know what I mean? Just how far are you willing to go yourself? Now, we can all use a hand. You know what I mean? I'm not suggesting that that's not a good thing. And, again, we, as we pointed out here, there are different reasons why people don't have the wherewithal, the courage, the strength, the fortitude to do that, you know. I just wonder, though, as a society, do we want to say that we're going to just give this without any expectations of accountability, or are we going to give you enough to pull yourself to get a little strength and then to move for yourself? And then at that point, that would be when we start cutting ties or cutting off. Does that seem inhumane to anybody to do that, to suggest to people, okay, this is
No, it's something you have to do. You have to do that. You can't continue to do it forever. After you're doing it forever, then you're living out with people, what you was pre-warned.
Yeah.
I had a guy I knew his name was Cookie Thornton, and he was a contractor.
Okay.
And he was doing work in an area outside of St. Louis called Webster, called Kirkwood. And he lived in Meacham Park, famous park. You can recognize the name Meacham.
So he
was doing a project, and he had his permits and everything. And doing a project, he had to take up several city parking spots. And police would come by and give him tickets and give him tickets and give him tickets. So he got fed up with that. He came by my house one time and talked to me, and I said, "Well, you know, I ain't never experienced that." But we talked and talked. Then next thing I know, I was out in Clayton going someplace, and I seen him sit up on the corner with some posters and pictures, you know, trying to explain to the public what was going on. But the tragedy of it, one time, one night, he went to a city council meeting there in Kirkwood and killed about four or five people in there.
Oh, no, man.
And he got killed himself. Yeah.
Mm.
You could probably Google it. Cookie Thornton. Oh. And I don't know what his first name was, but, you know, we called him that. So,
yeah.
You know, there you go with the empathy. I don't want to be in them shoes. I can sympathize well. So when people come to you with problems, personal problems, they all not usually centered around the same thing, like you make mention of for this conversation, of homelessness. It could be a number of things.
It
could be a number of things, yes.
Well, I like what Sister Cameron was saying when she was talking about this progression, starting with sympathy and ending with compassion. Now, do by compassion, how much action comes with that compassion, Miss Lee? What's behind that? What's the piece behind the compassion? That's the part I didn't quite. I like that. I like that construct. You know, you start with sympathy. I think some of those would agree with you. Go ahead.
I guess, just like I said, I take it all on the basis. Because what might
That's
be
true.
Sympathy, empathy, and compassion for one is not the same for another. And what for one, I may not be able to do to the other. I don't think there's no one circumstances to solve the problem. I think you've got to look at it, you've got to look at it collectively and go from there. Because collectively from there. And sometimes, I guess we'll never really know what is the root cause of all of this. And sometimes we do know what the root cause of it. And sometimes if we don't find out, which I can't do, and probably none of us can, find out the root cause. And until that root cause is resolved, we're going to be dealing with this from here to the day we leave here.
That is nothing but the naked truth right there. Nothing but the naked truth. And and sometimes people don't want to be honest with you about their root cause. See? And that is the point where you show the tough love and say, here's where I get off. I won't keep riding your roller coaster with you. I want to get off right here. Stop right here. Let me get off, and you can go on yourself. You understand what I'm saying? Somebody may say, that's cruel. Right. Leave them. Listen, are you going to go with them? Or do you leave them, you know, but so one of the things I see with the social breakdown and even the economic challenges for particularly this generation, I'm going to say those that are in the late 20s, 30s or so, I can remember when our local area Chamber of Commerce rated the school system, and they predicted back then that children that were in middle school and elementary school would not be able to qualify for some of the jobs that are here in the city right now, the higher paying jobs. I'm talking about with Amazon, right? And I'm talking about with Nissan plants and things of that nature. And it was interesting how right on the money they were. You understand what I'm saying? Now, a lot of those young people now, I think they strive and do well. I just recently had the pleasure, young lady, I ran into her, St. Louis, and she was trying to encourage entrepreneurship. I said, okay, all right. And they were having a little pop-up shop, if you will. It was a display of different young people. Man, it was the most refreshing thing I ever saw because they were out there really, I came home, Ms. Campbell, broke. All the money I had in my pocket, I ain't having number one. I couldn't tell my wife. I know I patronized at least five or six of the little fans, though, and they probably had about 20 of them. And my point is, it was so impressive to see that, you know. And we purchased a booth from my insurance company, purchased a booth, And it was just good, St. Louis, to see young folks like that. That's what I brought that up to say that what I would love to see all across America today is for us to spend some time and resources to tell young folks, look, you know, everybody's not enough of here. Some of y'all got some pretty good ideas. You just need to put it on paper and put some action behind it. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
That's true.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, is it?
That's true. And that's true. I agree with you. And a lot of young people, I see them as being a lot of differently. And you notice a lot of the people that we see that's on the street being, they're a whole different mindset and a group of people. I really think whatever is inside of you is going to come out. You've had people who've been homeless and you've done things, but somehow they just managed to come out. And some of it has to be inside of you. I don't care if I can give you $1 million, and if you don't have something inside of you, in a year, you're a million, you're going to be broken $1 million.
Watch out.
You're not going to use it. And I like to look at places that's trying to help and trying to help people to get it. It's a place that's not too far from me. It's a restaurant. And what he does is that they get the homeless people, they get homeless guys, they shelter them from 6 months to a year, and they teach them how to be chefs. And they cook in their restaurants and everything. And I thought, and you see these guys that hand out. And so they help them. And so try to support places that do things like that. And I referred a couple of homeless guys over there, and they working with them. So.
Nice.
You know, we just have to do what we can do. I think that's the whole point of it. We just do what we can do.
Now, you know, it's good to hear those type of things. And, I don't know. It looks like every place you go, though, the conditions seem to be identical. St. Louis, if we came right now and go to Penrose or some of those other areas, what's that street, what is it called, Kings Highway? I understand they've done some big things on King's Highway. But you'll find some of the same things that you see in Chicago and Cleveland, Ohio, and places like that. Is it the people or the conditioning? Somebody said earlier, mindset. It really has to do a lot with the mindset. You think about that, St. Louis, in terms of every city you go in. You see trash on the ground.
Yeah. I think some black people in this country is cursed. I really do.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I think it's past karma, past generational karma, that something happened somewhere, and it's just been, like people used to say, he had it coming, they had it coming. Well, that's what they was talking about.
Interesting. Well,
I don't think. See, I'm gonna tell you something.
Okay.
It's situations that breed conditions.
Huh.
It's situations that breed conditions. And if these situations exist, you can just about predict the outcome of those that's coming and being exposed to those situations. And what I'm talking about in homes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And I think that you, as far as black society is concerned, and I think that you probably have reached the saturation of getting the most out of what you have to choose from, what you have to work with, that you possibly can. Because the situations are a certain way that breathe these people that come out that's with the, have these conditional problems. And kids, too. See, if a child don't have what they need to have from their home and parent, well, they're going to have a particular outcome. And that's duplicated. That's just nothing that's isolated. It's duplicated in this society. And you see it's duplicated in different cities. Now, you do have just the opposite of that amongst black society. It's not enough, but it does exist. But on the other hand, you have a large number of those that's coming out of, that's growing up in certain situations that's going to produce a certain behavioral outcome. And it is what it is, unless you can stop that.
So now, and this is the part that this is the medicine that doesn't taste good to the mouth, but it's good for your belly. And it is the very people who are responsible for developing children's character, for their custodial care, right? And they have the legal authority to shape those things if they're not willing to change what they do. Sadly, their actions have an adverse effect on the children. Now, I would ask the question, who has the, not really legal authority, but who has the moral or spiritual authority to evoke, teach, encourage, or push people down that road, but the religious institutions, places like that. Now, I don't know what you think, Ms. C. It seems like people are losing confidence even on that front now. Is that your observation in general? Not everybody, but in general.
I think people are losing hope. I think people are losing hope in the spiritual realm. They're losing hope in the physical realm. They're losing hope in the country, the economy. People are so much gone. Just in the last year, you know, we've gone through so much. And one of the things I think, too, is that, especially with the younger generation, I think we grew up in a time of, We listened how you can be reliant, and we knew how to work and make things happen. But they're coming up in a whole different paradigm. They're used to doing things, having things, going places, and to tease my kids. I said, I didn't even know what a shrimp was until I got halfway old, old dessert. Y'all go out and order shrimp, you know, 10 and 12 years old. And, you know, different things. Go out and buy coffee. And all of a sudden, their lives change. And then when we went to school, we went to college, we had hope to be able to buy homes and get good jobs and drive decent cars, you know. These children, they don't see it now. They come out of college and they work in, what, $10, $12 an hour jobs.
Wow,
and so it's a big paradigm, but more specifically, I think it's a spiritual thing. And then you have children. Used to be, you have also. This is my perception of it: is that if the head is broken, it can't fix. If the heel of my shoe is broken, I can't walk right. On the other leg. So what the head is, and a lot of people come from some broken, messed up places. And it's hard to always dig yourself out of it. So like you said, I told somebody, I think it's generational curses too, but it's hard to break that. Somebody got to come along and say, we're going to do this no more. And break it. But until that happens,
well, I feel happy to know somebody will see it like I do.
Well, that's the truth, St. Louis. That, I mean, well, here's the thing. What I have observed, there are so-called sympathizers who have come to suggest, particularly the young people, that you're owed something, so you don't have to work for it, and you should demand that you get something without sweating and earning it. That's the part that bothers me, is because you give, like she's saying, you give young people the wrong impression that the world or life owes them something, and it doesn't. It really doesn't. No, they didn't
have
to be
here. There is. There are some forces that's trying to tear the United States now. I tell you that now. And you can say that people describe it as being globalist. which has a lot of credence. You got individuals that's very, very wealthy that's working to support things that's trying to drastically change the traditional behaviors of we have known in the United States. So those things do exist. And they would use groups of people in order to push these situations that cause disruptions and chaos.
Okay.
And see, these kids are coming from, these young people are coming from, not all of them. I want everybody to get that straight. It's not all of them, but it's too many. And they come from, they're coming from a background that's not preparing them for anything. And at some point in time, when they get beyond those halls of education that they really wasn't educated in, then they begin to realize that something is wrong. And they begin to look around. You know, one of the most, like, for instance, they just now started, they came on with these things now where they want to pay athletes for their image coming out of high school.
Yeah, you were talking about that the other night, and I think it's worth kind of, Ms. Campbell, are you familiar with that, Ms. Campbell?
I kind of heard about it. They want to pay them when they come out for their images and stuff. And
if you don't mind, let St. Louis lay that groundwork for that. We got a little time to kind of hit that because I thought about that too, and I really think that's a setup for failure.
Well, you got it's been going on. This idea has been going on for a while that you got college athletes. They might even try it in high school. That are very popular and achieved. And you got businesses and marketers that want to market their image to the public, to the consuming public, in the form of apparel and other consumables that people will pay for because it has their image on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're on a college team and you say you're a particular player, and because of your image, based on how you perform, you're getting paid, say, $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the other players on the team? They're not getting paid anything.
You're right.
And it's their performance that makes it way in the team play for you to be able to achieve the things that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point do they have some animosity? Human beings have going to have animosity. They ain't going to say, well, I ain't going to block as hard as I've been blocked and getting my knees tore up. Because if I get my knees tore up and I can't play, I'm going to lose my scholarship and don't get an education.
Yeah. So
you follow me?
I got you. Listen, watch this thing. Well, you said it right. It's been going a while. Here's the underlay for the overplay. Now, for years, a lot of young people were encouraged to go and do well athletically and so that they can go to get into a good top-10 college to get into the pros, not to go to college to get an education. That's where it rubbed me wrong right there. I think we are encouraging young people. Even if you got you're athletically entitled to skill, good. But make doggone sure you don't just run in there through the front door and out the back door and you ain't put nothing in your head when you leave. You understand what I'm saying? That's what I got a problem with right there. And
well,
the motivation,
that's called leveraging. You're not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
And it only makes good sense.
Don't get me wrong, Sam.
It can cause a lot of animosity because I'm on that team. I want probably $1 million. I'm just going to be honest with you. And but we live in a society now that technically, look at a lot of the shows. They pick, I hate those housewives and those basketball wives. They just pick each other against each other. And these kind of generation of people is like, you got to be prettier, you got to be better, you got to outshine, you got to be stronger. And we put so much on our self-images that we don't – and then what happens is that, like I said, beauty fails, you can hurt, you don't look good. then they don't know how to handle it.
Right.
Because
right,
they lost
right.
what they thought they had.
And
well, I
see,
always had a problem with you. No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Are you the doctor, ma'am?
No,
is she the doctor that come on sometime?
No.
I'm not the doctor. I was on the thing, but I'm not the doctor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not.
Well, I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead, please.
No, you didn't cut me off. But I was like, even so, this is my opinion. The system is devised to make you look like you're striving, but undermining it makes you fail. Look at a lot
wow.
of, and since you mentioned athletes, they go in and they make all that money. Now, come on now.
Mm-hmm.
You're 20-some years old. And you come from, I don't care where you came from, then all of a sudden I can walk out my door and buy a $40,000, $50,000 car, it's going to swell my head. Something needs to have stipulations on it. And if they're doing
yes.
that with these athletes, and then some of their parents ain't responsible enough to govern their money either, they need to say, okay, we don't let you have it, but so much is going here. You can't touch it when you get here.
So let me ask you this. Should the parents say, absolutely no, I'm not going to allow my child to sign such a contract until they graduate from college? Should they take that step? We got Pastor Wallow on with it. Pastor, jump in anytime you get ready. Should the parents say, I'm not going to allow it. I'm not going to have it. Should they?
Well, you're going to have that other voice standing on your shoulder whispering in your ear, what happens if you get hurt?
Well, that's true, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So, Pastor, how are you going, sir? We're talking from the topic when empathy is more helpful than sympathy. Empathy is generally where you encourage people to do better, get on up. All right, you failed. Get on up. Come on. I'm with you. I got you. Right? And sympathy is where you just pat them on the head and say, I'm so sorry. Look at you. You done fell down. Poo, poo, baby, baby, baby. What about that, Pastor
Wells? You know, well, I'm truthfully appreciative of, you know, what you all are talking about. And I think you're speaking about athletes and deserving, whether they deserve the finances at such a young age and getting so much money, and then other people who they play with that's not getting anything. Everybody's not going to make it to the pros, to the NBA.
No.
Coming out of straight out of high school, so it's not about the college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something good enough to come out of high school, and that has happened. Should they go get the money? Yes, go get the money if that's what they choose to do. But it's not like exercising their gifts. And if they qualify, you know, I can only imagine me being able, you know, I'm a basketball player, and if I was good, and if I appreciate the teammates setting a rolling pick for me or getting a rebound and getting the ball to me, I'm not going to forget that. In other words, I won't be selfish with it. There are some athletes that have gone on and took care of the whole crew that he came up with.
Okay.
And some athletes have done that. In other words, they appreciated when the person blocked for them or gave them the ball. And, you know, I mean, that happens. So they don't get the money, when qualified for the money, it's just like a person that's in school, that's intelligent, that's qualified to go be something very big in that arena. Should they not get the money because they're so young? You know what I mean? When they making so much money off of the young person, you know, and it's just everybody's not going to make it to no NBA. If I got 10 players, it would be beautiful if all 10 went to the NBA, without a doubt. But it don't go like that.
Interesting.
So I would say, you know, in my come up, you know, because I was a pretty good ball player, and I'm thinking about those that was on my team. Had I made it, the way I was in the streets, I took care of everybody. So I can only imagine if I made it to the league, I would have taken care of all of them that played on the team, whether they was on the bench. I'm just using that for an example. So I don't want to neglect the thought of knowing how good athletes are versus just going to school because they're good at athletics. You know, it could be vice versa. The one that's going to school, that's very smart and intelligent, that's learning a lot, could be that same person that was athletically good. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, this is what the word said. I'm going to give it back over to you, Pastor Doc. The word says when a man is overtaken, quote, in a fault. I'm just using that for an example. You who are spiritual, restore such a one spirit of meekness, considering yourself being the same one in that position. So doing a positive thing, which is receiving a whole lot of money for your skills, you know what I mean? So you want to make sure that you consider the ones that's not getting a lot of money and say, that could have been me not getting a lot of money, but just so happy it is me, so I'm going to make sure I let them know how much I appreciate them giving me a pick when I need it, catching the ball or blocking out from the air, just for an example. So that's a big part of it.
Well, now, Pastor, I read an article a few months ago, and it was about a child, still a child, because I don't think she turned 17, and she was entering a PhD program. That's how fast she had advanced. And I asked Ms. Campbell if they were pushing her emotionally too fast.
Yeah.
Was I off on that in that question, Ms. Campbell? Do you think? I just wonder if she was emotionally stable enough, really. Not to say that she can do the academics and that she shouldn't receive credit for it. You know what I'm saying? Some things need to be in
academically, academically she is. Emotionally, she's still a 13-year-old. And she has to be. It's kind of like you take a child and you put them somewhere. You got to go through stages. Now, I believe it's advanced, and you might have to do it, but you're going to have to, and she's getting in a PhD program at 13, but she still needs to be that 13-year-old.
Absolutely.
She still
needs to be able to be,
and they have to watch her really quickly, because you can get caught up, and she can, apparently Jala is brilliant to be able to do that, but you got to balance it out with her. Still let her be 13.
Right. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not against people making money, right, even athletes. I wonder if it sends the wrong message, though. I did a presentation to a group in Pontiac, Michigan, in 2011, and one of the mothers that was there told me about a story, and I got the impression that this was a family member of hers, Dr. Wallace. She says that the young man that she was talking about was a fairly successful drug dealer in the Detroit, Pontiac, Michigan area. But he took his money and he started a scholarship, an unofficial scholarship fund, and paid for at least up to about $70,000 for at least three different people to go to college and graduate. And they went on to graduate and do things. And she was like, but isn't that a place for that? You understand what I'm saying? Now, that sounds good on the surface, doesn't it? That sounds good on the surface.
Right.
But do we want to send the message that anything goes to make your money? Help me with that, somebody.
No, I wouldn't say you want to send a message, but I do want to make sure we take a look at all the money that these people are getting off of these kids. And I'm talking about a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
A lot of money, man. So anytime one is able to get some finance, some kids sometimes don't even go in the league. I'll give you a good example. Scottie Pippen's son right now could have went into the league. He decided not to go, so he's going to stay in college a little longer. So that happens also.
Mm.
His father's already wealthy.
Right.
You know, he sent a great message out there. So not everybody steps up to go on into the league. But then there are those that will go. And sometimes even people that are of age that have gone in the league and have gotten a whole lot of money, and some of them are broke right now.
Yeah, that's the truth.
And it happens, so it's just a matter of who the individual is and how he conducts himself. There's one guy in there by the name of Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi, I think that's his name, Leonard, this guy right here, he's spending his money well. He's not going buying all that, what you all were speaking about earlier. He's not doing that. So, you know, some people actually are doing fantastic with receiving that kind of money, money that they never had before. But yet still, they treat me just like, I got to go down here and buy me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You understand? Instead of going by $300. You know. I mean, you got something in there that's doing that, man. That's beautiful. So I would say get the money, because a person could get injured without somebody saying, I'm not going to block for you. They can get injured when the person blocking for them. And suddenly,
they
may not be able to be playing and more kill you. So it's not to send the bad message out. It's just a matter of what decision a person makes, and then once a person makes that decision, you find ways and means to govern yourself according to what you're not used to. In other words, you're not used to a whole lot of money like that, man. Suddenly, all of a sudden, sign a contract, now they're very wealthy. So it's just, I don't know, man. I just rather for them to, you know, to be able to get what they're worth. And don't forget about the ones who was there with him. That would be beautiful, man, because making sure the team players, you know, you're making sure that they need to be known. I'm going to let you know, man, how much I appreciate you here. Take this right here.
Right.
Oh, man, that's outstanding, man. That's outstanding.
You know,
and
yes, go ahead.
When the schools was, when that money was going to the school was providing scholarships for students to go in and seek their profession in other, especially in other sports.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. And if the guy was going to have empathy, he would do the same thing because he's there at the school on a scholarship that former students who are now your, what do they call that when the former students of the school? What do they call them people?
Alumni.
Alumni. The alumni contribute to an endowment, and the endowment is so big because the alumni was able to get a good education. It paid a lot, and they was able to give back to the endowment that provide money for scholarships for students.
Sure.
That's disadvantage.
Sure. Okay.
So,
and
like I said before, you got one athlete that's going to get paid probably. All of them are going to get paid.
No.
And see, if those athletes in college, if they get hurt, in many cases of the time, they lose their scholarship or they can't play.
Mm-hmm.
And then
and
they got to they kicked out.
And what if they,
and here's they, another
they
thing.
Up for them to stay in the school and get a degree. Now, so let me ask that question. Do you think we should, society, the people in general, should encourage the message that you can make your money at any cost? Is that a healthy message for young people?
People are never going to do that right. But let me put one more point out there. Look at all the kids that was required to expend themselves to create just one LeBron James. Started from his earliest years.
What?
And where are they at now?
Wow.
I think that they should be required to pay reparations to all those kids because their parents had to expend money on equipment and travel and team fees all through his life to provide competition so that he could hone his skills to become what he has become.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's an interesting perspective, man, that they should pay reparation to the people that are on the team with him. Wow, that didn't make it to the program. The truth of the matter is, though, it's the interest of the marketers and these people who want to use the image. That's who you really should hold at fault, I think. And I'm personally I don't think y'all have to agree with me, but I personally think that what is somewhat egregious is the suggestion to young people that as long as you're making a dollar, it don't matter what you do. Because to me, it's kind of like offering your soul to the devil. You know, all money is not
good money. In the part of the situation when it comes with the athletes and things like that, they need a strong mentor behind them. And the reality of it is that some of them graduate from college and never make that kind of money in your lifetime. it's just true. If you go to college, you never make that kind of money. And it could be life-changing as well as for their family. Our money ain't good money. The drug dealer selling it, I would not be happy with a child that sold drugs. I don't care what they did with the money. The kids with those athletes, and I guess one of my biggest things is that there needs to be somebody back there to keep them grounded. They're still young. They have young minds. And they're going to do and get themselves in trouble, some of them, not all of them. They might make decisions that are not beneficial because money can make you cocky, and especially at a younger age. And they're going to have so many people coming at them. And especially girls don't come out the woodwork. It's going to come after them. And so there needs to be something in place to say, they're not privileged. Kind of like you, the people leave a what they call an inheritance or a substance or something for their children. Hey, you can't get it until you're 30. Because at that particular time, you're at a more settled age and your mindset is not the same as you were when you were 20. I shudder to think at 20 and all of a sudden I came to $1 million. No right, and it's not because of being bad decisions. I was making young decisions, especially if you made a decision coming from, I just say, an average or a poor household. And unfortunately, some of the parents are pushed their children to do. I also know circumstances where a lady and I grew up with this boy. And his mother knew he was selling drugs. She knew. And everybody knew he was selling drugs. Yeah, he took care of people. He bought mama a house. Okay. He bought people cars. But he was a drug dealer. And on the same hand, even though he's taking care of people, he also destroying lives.
Yeah. That's
so his money wasn't good money.
Okay. Yeah. You know,
I need to get there honest with you. I just want them to be able to keep it. That's one of my problems.
Yeah. I agree. I believe that for urban America, this is a discussion we ought to have in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our families. What is the norm? What is acceptable? What is not acceptable, right? Because too many of our young guys think that they have the rap song lyric mentality, I'll get it the way I live. And there's no limit to that, right? And the truth of the matter is most of these are emotionally babies, and they feel like they got to protect their loot with a weapon of some sort. And that's largely what leads to turf wars and territorial fights and conflicts and what have you. And it's an ugly thing. It's a very ugly thing. I just don't know if it's healthy. It's a healthy mentality. Now, I'm all for having wealth. There's a difference in having wealth and having a whole lot of money. You know,
that's absolutely right. That's true. Yeah.
Well, then, too, you got to look at these people to tell.
One second, Ms. People. Let's go to St. Louis there for a second. Go to St. Louis.
Yeah, there's another thing. You got people telling young people that they don't have to go to college. They don't need to go to college. Well, let me tell you something. You need to prepare a child to be able to do the rigors of any environment that they go in, especially college.
Because your
son is a mechanical engineer, and the courses he had to take is courses that are considered to be hard.
They were.
And a lot of kids will shy away from them hard courses. Same way with your athletes that's playing on these college teams. These athletes are not taking hard subjects.
No.
They're taking sports medicine and things like that. You find very few that's becoming an engineer. Why is that? Because for you to major in a particular degree, it's going to require courses in math.
Yeah.
Those math carry 5 credit hours. Those math courses, calculus, exponential differentials. Now, here's the thing. For you to be able to do well in those courses, it's going to require you to do anywhere from 2.5 to 3 hours per week per credit hour.
That's right. That's right. A study.
And if you are doing a course like mechanical engineering, or say you're going to have to do 125 credit hours in order to graduate and divide that over 4 years.
Well, that's true. You're right.
And it's 2 semesters a year. So you're talking about 8 semesters. 125 divided by 8, you're talking about something like, what, 13 credit hours? Say it was 15 credit hours. 2.5 to 3 hours per credit hour, that's 45 hours a week studying.
Now,
where are you going to have the time to play the sport, to practice for the sport? Because the NCAA at Division I and II schools only limit you to 25 hours of practice per week because they know you got to study no matter what degree you're seeking. Well, 45 and 25 is how much? That's 70 hours.
That's right. That's right.
Now,
okay. You
got to go to sleep. You got to travel from class to class. You got to eat. Add all those hours up and see if that's possible.
What are you trying to say, man? You ain't got no time for it. That's what you're trying to say. No, well, so.
Not on this planet.
Well, your point is well taken that there are things that require discipline. And I think those are the skills that you should teach children early on in their formative years. Now, where they go with, now you've heard me say that I personally don't think you have to have a particular degree to be successful, especially if you establish a goal for yourself and you are successful at meeting your goal. Even with, now, I don't know, some of these degrees they offer these colleges, I'm wondering where's the application for it in the real world, but that's a whole other story.
Is that a math with a well-strong background in math?
I got you.
Will work for you no matter where you go.
Point well taken.
Same thing
point
in physics. If you got a strong background in physics, if you're going to be a garbage collector and you throwing cans of garbage, well, the physics tells you how to handle the can so you don't get hurt.
I'm going to tell you something, Louis. You're making me feel bad because I had to drop calculus, man. So I was going to kick him out of my hand. And I changed my major, too, man. You heard my feelings, St. Louis. You heard my feelings. No, but no.
Well, I wouldn't have it if my sibling came talking about changing a major.
Well,
you ain't changing no major. You're going to change your life.
I was a bad guy, man. I'm sorry. That's my fault. No, but.
Well, then that gets back to the old point that everybody just ain't going to make it. But the thing is that you can only prepare them to perform in the race. Now, when the gates open and the gun go off, well, you done all you can and should do to get them there.
Right.
Now, when time comes for them to perform and they don't, well, you can never say to yourself, I wish I had her.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, Fennels. You I can't argue that. If we're talking the general topic, when empathy is more helpful than sympathy. And really the only point that I'm trying to drive tonight is that there's a thin line between when you stop helping people, right, and when you are enabling helpless. And that's my thing. I don't think it's good for us to enable anybody, regardless of ethnicity, to be helpless.
You ever change hard drives on a computer?
Yeah.
They got it now where you can connect the new computer up. What do you do with your phone? You can connect, put your phone, old phone, next to your new phone, and all the information off the old phone be transferred to the new phone.
Yeah.
That happens today.
Yeah.
Well, that's the same way it's supposed to be with a kid.
Hmm.
You're supposed to be able to transfer all your life's experiences that's in your brain over to that child. That way that child's off where you left off. Not trying to catch up to you, but he or she starts off where you left off. That's the whole concept of standing on ancestors' shoulders.
Well,
and see, you cannot stand on ancestors' shoulders and your ancestors is laying on their back. You're not going to be no higher elevated if they're laying on their back.
I think you're making referencing to a sociological paradigm that is true, that it is reasonably expected that if you have three generations, each generation brings something, extends something new beyond on top of the previous generation. So that's you see that in models of genealogy and what have you, and cycles of social growth and development. So that's a good point that you're making.
You got to be able to pass on to that child, I don't care, even if it's just collard greens and buttermilk cornbread.
What about that, Missy? Missy, I bet you can cook some collard greens and buttermilk cornbread, can't you? What about hot water cornbread?
Hey, that was passed on.
What about hot water cornbread? St. Louis, you make me hungry, man.
That
stop
was passed on.
Absolutely.
Made some other day for my mom.
What? That recipe.
Yeah, sure did.
If we come back to it, though, lady and gentlemen, is it fair to say that it's not hurting anyone to show them a little tough love? In other words, let them know that I'm here to be supportive, to give you what I can, but I'm not here to be a crutch for you. So you're going to have to work. You may not be ready for it. You may not be used to it. It may be hard for you, but I'm going to push you to be your best. Is that a reasonable conclusion we can take away from this idea of empathy versus sympathy? What's unreasonable about that position? Pastor Waller, what do you think? Can you hear me, Brother Pastor?
Okay. Yeah, can you say that again? Say that again for me.
Is it unreasonable to tell a person, young person in particular, that I'm going to be tough with you in love to push you to bring out your best?
Is it unreasonable? No, I think it's a good thing. If, you know, you get to try to let them know what's offered. You know, you offer them. That's the decision that's going to be finalized by the person who hears what you have to say versus, you know, just like demanding. Because I go back again, I'm looking at the athletic arena. I'm really looking at that on a deep level because they're good enough to play in the league, in the NBA.
Right.
Can I humbly say, yes, I do believe I could have got cut. But I think I was good enough? Yes. Did I go in the first in high school? No. What did I do? I took it to the streets. Yes, I did. And I did something that I heard somebody say earlier about, you know, taking care of people that's in the neighborhood because I had a lot of money. Yes, I did. Had a great heart. But when I discovered that I was doing more harm than good, I realized that I had to walk away from it. So some people learn a lesson. You know, even when they go into the league early and get a whole lot of money, they learn a lesson through the process to start doing better. But from the beginning, the word said for the love of money is the root of all kind of evil, even when you don't know it. See, I didn't know that what I was doing was bringing harm. I thought maybe it was just something that goes on in life because I was young, dumb, you know, inexperienced, full of fluid, always ready to do it the way I lived my life. But that doesn't take away from God saw something in me and brought me out of what I was in and put me on his team, which tells me that he looked for people like that. You know what I mean? Had it not been for that, then I could say I was a terrible person throughout the whole duration. But God saw some good in me, and now he knows that I have compassion on people. And so whatever you know, it's nothing like offering it to them, but I'm not forcing it on people because it's not easy to walk away from what I walked away from. So I can suggest it. I can put it out there, but it's up to the person to say, okay, he's trying to help me. And that's what you're saying. So it's not a bad thing to offer people what you have to offer, but it's a terrible thing to have something to offer and then you just withhold from them and just talk about what they're doing and saying all kind of things against them, everything, when you just don't know. God is so merciful and kind and filled with compassion, you never know who will listen to you if you are actually bringing it to the table in that manner. So just like you be doing. I mean, you do that a lot. You offer people what you have to offer. You just, you compassionate like that. But when it comes down to forcing it on people, I don't force it on people even today, even though I know I have the solution. I know I have the answer to a problem according to street light. You know, of course, I believe I can turn the whole city of Nashville around through what I've learned. Yes, but should I do it by force? You know, making them say, you're going to stop doing drugs. God did not do me like that. He did not force me to stop selling drugs or anything like that, man. So it's not easy to walk away from things, man. People have their way of doing things, and some people get caught up, and some people don't. Thank God for those who didn't get caught up, you know, and went on to do things in college and things like that. And but I've seen some people that went to college very smart and some of the worst kind in the world. You know what I mean? The worst kind. I mean, when I say the worst kind, smart and intelligent, believe me. Seriously, I was affiliated with a lot of them. And so it's just a matter of what kind of heart you have. You know, that's what God look at anyway, look at the heart, man. There's a lot of people out there right now lost, called up, need somebody to encourage them. Don't need nobody to put them down. Because when God has compassion on a person, he already know they're down. So all he's doing is reaching down to lift them up. Now, that's a beautiful thing. That's the kind of person I need to talk to me. You know what I'm saying? Help me. Don't sit up there and finish destroying me. I'm already in a bad situation. I mean, the street life is corrupt. I'm corrupting the community. I don't know what I'm doing. And then here you're going to come down and mash on me a little bit more to make it even worse. I mean, that's no compassion in that, man. You got to have compassion on that.
Gotcha. Okay. Tell us what we're trying to say.
And then two things happen for a reason people don't understand. I tell you, like my grandson, he wanted to go back up to St. Louis for 4th of July. Something happened to his car. He was having a problem with the starter.
Oh, wow.
And he's going to leave out there Friday, put it in the shop. And they baffled with what's going on with it. And it's still in the shop. He wanted to go to his uncle's birthday party in Alabama this weekend. It's still in the shop. And I said, you know, it may be something that I want you to get on the highway.
There you go. And you got to listen to that.
It may be something that's trying to tell you something that could save your life.
Things work
that way.
Well, I believe you, but that might preach right there. Watch yourself, St. Louis. That might preach right there, boy. I felt something right there. No, but that is so true that there are many times where we are pushing hard to get something, and we don't realize that we want to get on that airplane, but we got a ticket at the bus station. I wish I had a witness. Everybody.
And you know, well, the biblical story, the man was riding the donkey and came upon a path, and the donkey just wouldn't go no more. Matter of fact, the donkey sat down.
Watch out.
And he pushed and pulled and everything he could for the donkey. And just about the next thing you knew, up ahead, a rock slide occurred. If they had been there, they would have got killed. So, believe it or not, things do operate that way.
Okay. Well, I mean, listen, I tell young folk all the time, and people have told me, Missy, Man, you every time you speak, you got to have a dictionary. That's right. When you're around me, keep a dictionary. Go look it up if you don't know what I'm talking about. And you can't associate it in the context of conversation. Go look it up, then we talk back again. You understand what I'm saying? But the point is that there's always a learning opportunity. I think that's what we should keep young people. Be hungry and thirsty for knowledge, for growth, development, and you can't lose. You can't lose. I don't see how you can. I don't see how you can. But, wow. Yeah, I cannot believe Pastor Waller has used up the clock already. That's about 9 minutes. What are we going to do, Missy? We're about out of time. Great conversation. I hope that somebody down the road can benefit from it. From time to time, I have people call me off the air, and sometimes people reach out to me via email and kind of share their stories and what have you. Again, I pray that this will be useful to somebody. I'm seeing today, though, if I could wrap up, then I'll get a final word from everybody. I'm seeing today that something that's a little concerning, and that is young people are being robbed of curiosity, of motivational drive, and interest in being productive. I'm not saying everybody, but too many young folk that are obviously energetic, healthy, and capable, they have this mentality, you know, that I should have the very best that's on the shelf, but I shouldn't have to pay for it. Something about that ain't right. And I'd like to see what we can do to change that. If you deserve to get, you have the opportunity to go get it off the shelf, but guess what? You got to pay for it. Can somebody say pay for it? You got to pay for that. Otherwise, they're stealing. We don't want you to do that now. Anyway, let me let it go. Miss T, what you want to tell me? Tell me something that I can hold on until next week. Can you give me something I can hold on to next week? Thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I guess it's an interesting conversation. I'm glad I was able to join. And I guess collectively we found that everybody said was right. And I agree, compassion, sympathy, empathy, it all rolls into a big package, and we should all possess it all. I've come to realize, and this is me personally, that each of us have one particular area, a journey that we're supposed to do. And however we can impact people and impact the world, you do it. Your way is not my way. And I also agree with what he said, is that this is my thing now, as they're coming. If sometimes obstacles come, but don't look at the obstacles, look at the beyond it. And biblically, the Bible says all things work together, those who love the Lord, it's called according to your purpose. And I asked him how you called. And so look at it from a bigger perspective. That's my approach.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate great wisdom. We appreciate you joining us tonight. I know you're busy out there in the field, been watching your work, and want to encourage you to keep on doing what you can to keep folk healthy out there. We need
well,
that.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank
you. And I'm going to have to say goodnight. I got a mom in here I got to take care of, so. I will say goodnight.
All right. Thank you again.
Bye-bye.
So it's, we snowballing to you, man. Great conversation, man. You learned me a few things tonight, St. Louis. You learned me a few things as an old folk.
Well, that's what I'm supposed to. Well, I'm supposed to. I've been around the block more times than you have.
All right.
But see, here's the thing. History is a current event. The things that happened 5 minutes ago, 5 days ago, or 5 years ago determine what's going to happen 5 minutes from now, 5 days from now, 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a current event.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate you. All right. Pastor Waller, take us home. We don't need a spaceship to take you home because Pastor Waller got the microphone. Master Rapper said everything's going to be all right. Well, thank you, Brother Pastor. We've been talking from the topic when empathy is more helpful than sympathy. My friend is going to take us home with the final word for tonight.
Pastor Doctor.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay, we ready.
Yes, sir.
I was just making sure that I was talking to my sisters, and now they've been to leave. So I just wanted to thank God for everybody, man, who had a chance to tap into what we're doing. And I encourage you to keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is making a grain of a difference. Because every time we bring something to the table, you know, it's something that's interesting and something that's needed. And the Word of God says it like this. He said, I will supply all of your needs of you in glory. So when we're standing in the need for something, man, we just know, you just keep it in his hand and just believe that he's that supplier. But we have to keep him first, never second, never last, but always first. Because you know the word says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All these things shall be added unto us. So just let you know that right there, man. Keep up the good work. I hear back to you on that note.
All right. Well, we appreciate you, sir. And the many years been there. We appreciate it.
Yes.
All right. Yes. We'll bring this show to an end, and we'll see y'all next Tuesday for another episode of Talk Grace. Thank you.